Hello and welcome to Do the Right Thing, your weekly writing prompt podcast. I'm Alexandra.
And I'm Jarvis.
Jarvis and I were aspiring writers with one simple common problem. We never actually took the time to sit down and write.
Exactly. So to solve this issue, we are issuing a challenge. Each week we sit down and write a complete short story using three or four randomly generated words.
Then we come on the podcast, we read a story, we talk about what we learned in reading it, and then we talk about the rest of the story sent in by you wonderful listeners.
Exactamundo. We're simply here to help you do the right thing.
A Doof Media production. So today's like a slightly special week. We skipped last week on account of a mountain of classwork, amongst other events. And so we'll be covering stories from last week and this week.
Yeah. So I am really looking forward to seeing what the amalgamation of 2 weeks of writing will give us. And then also I would like to say thank you to our audience for being so understanding. This is my last semester, and I made the very poor choice of taking 5 4,000 level classes. But thankfully I should be done by this summer. So yeah, I'm just really glad we can move some stuff around, but still give you a pretty solid episode of Do the Right Thing.
Pretty solid. I'm glad that's what we're shooting for. And you know, I can't wait to see your little diploma with your name on it and all cursive and stuff.
I know. I kind of want to frame it, but I have a very strong feeling that like as soon as I get it, my mom's going to like steal it and put it up somewhere, which is fine. I mean, really, I just need it so that I can get into my profession, because apparently to be a librarian, you need a master's degree.
Right. Okay. Yeah. The information tech stuff is like crazy. I know. They go through so much and then get paid and respected so little. It's awful.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, granted, it is like a decently higher paying job, because it is working with the state. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So like when you worked for the state, it's not, of course, I'm not going to be making like doctor money,
right?
But I will probably be getting paid more than a teacher.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Which is sad, honestly, right? Because I feel that teaching is definitely a lot more important than me knowing where each book is in a book.
Uh-huh. I think being a librarian might be a little bit more than that, but I see what you mean. It is
a lot more. But
it's definitely not something that is as valued in society. It's weird. I wish we cared more about libraries and stuff. But how about we get into this episode? What are the words that we're covering this week? Both sets.
Yeah, so the words from last week were harass, no, depressed, and yearn. And the words for this week are provision, cemetery, answer, and lay.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the best way to sort of organize this is to first start on last week's stories and then hop into this week's stories. Cool. So the first story, or the story we will be reading and talking about this week, is by JustStan8460 with Remember.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll get into it.
Nice.
Jerry Trumbull was running late with his paper route, one breezy Sunday afternoon in early spring. He had been late starting, in fact. Why was he late? Well, have you ever had a paper route before? Eventually you get sick of waking up early to individually wrap papers and then lug them around on your weekend of freedom away from prison, or school. Once he got a bit older, he could handle the route from his bike, carrying the papers in a sack slung across his shoulder. This method was a huge step up in speed compared to his previous modes of transport. For a time, he had pulled them in his wagon, when the weather permitted, or his sled, when snow covered the ground. Unfortunately, sometimes when a faster method is discovered, it is easy to lose track of when to start a thing. Also, he was sick of the routine. Even though it was his only source of income, he dreaded that jolting thud as the printer dropped the bundle of unwrapped papers on the front porch of his parents' house, waking him up every Saturday morning. Needless to say, the glamour of being a paperboy had worn off. That was the real reason he was running behind. He simply lost interest. To him, it was only a boring local rag. To the older folks in the area, the weekend circulation was their only source of coupons, advertisements, obituaries, and general babble. He had already endured some harsh comments on his lateness that day from a few of his patrons who were sitting on their porches. That didn't bother him anymore like it had when he was new to the gig. Anyways, whether you can relate to his attitude or not, Jerry was in a hurry to finish. Sunday afternoon was stretching into early evening, and he had a game to play with some of his online community. He had found the bottom of the sack and was finishing up the part of his route that was heavily wooded. There was a large stretch with no houses, and the trees were beginning to show those eerie signs of creep and crawl. He had one final stop to make, the church. It stood about a quarter of a mile from the next corner, surrounded and overhung by trees. There was a small gravel parking area to the right, complete with an old hitching post still intact. Its members parked there each Sunday. It was not a large church, having only a short narthex and a sanctuary. Its wood siding was in need of a fresh paint job, but the steeple was in good condition, with a bell hanging in the middle, readily awaiting the next time it would be called upon to announce the start of service. He had never really looked at the property before. It was always his last stop, which he would blow past, slinging the paper sideways over his shoulder, never really looking where it landed. This gave him a chuckle each time, because it would remind him of his grandpa. The story was that one day his grandparents had gone to a flea market, and his grandma had bought some gaudy picture frame and showed it to his grandpa on their drive home. He thought it was so ugly that he flung it out his car window and into the ditch, giving it what he liked to call an aerial burial. However, this time was different. As if feeling a sudden air of reverence, he decided to park his bike and walk the paper up to the front step. This gave him a chance to notice there was a cemetery situated behind it. Placing the paper on the top step, he walked to the corner of the building and peered back behind it to get a better look. He then walked the 30 or 40 feet of its length and, reaching the back corner, paused to get a lay of his surroundings. The lot was about an acre in size, but surrounded by dense forest and peppered within by tall, mature oaks and poplars. There was a small wrought iron fence that stretched from one side of the plot to the next, with stone pillars at each corner. In the center was a gate, flanked by two similar pillars with a quaint arch overhead. Without even looking over his shoulder, he walked right up to it. It read Stoats Grove Cemetery. Surveying the fence and gate once more, he could not help but notice how well-maintained it appeared, with the grass cut close right up to it. It seemed that whoever was in charge of the grounds treated it with the same reverence he was feeling at that moment. There was an articulating latch that turned silently, and he pushed the gate open. Stepping inside, he surveyed the field of cut and etched stones before him. Many of them were only a few inches high, but a fair few were topped with statues of angels, Celtic crosses, and obelisks. He began to walk among the headstones and read a few here and there. Most of the names he had never heard of. Others were last names which he recognized as people who had been in Stoats Grove for generations. A few were the last names of his friends. Whether they were related or not, he got the impression that he was walking among their grandparents and even their great-grandparents. Some had fresh bouquets of flowers or pots of well-watered plants next to them. Others had charms resting on top of them. A few had figurines and small statuettes situated in front. He felt touched by this as a calm washed over him. This was not a scary, haunted graveyard. It was a place of rest. Looking around, the trees that surrounded the fence almost seemed to be bent at the top, as though bowing their heads in respect for the dead. The back of the cemetery was bordered by a hedge about head high. Stopping 10 feet from this hedge, he closed his eyes and took a deep breath, turning his face upward. The breeze that whispered at the tops of the canopy did not reach him, but the soft rustle of the leaves was soothing nonetheless. As he exhaled, his gaze fell to the foot of the hedge, where he noticed the bottoms of two more stone pillars about 5 feet apart. This looked to be a back gate. The path had ended where he stood, but he found it curious to think that anyone would need to exit through this gate. His curiosity was piqued. He crouched down and knelt to put his hands on the gate below the lowest boughs and pushed back and forth. As expected, they did not move an inch. He stood and pushed his hands through the middle of the hedge and felt for the top of the gate. He struggled a bit but was able to separate the hedge enough to peer through briefly before it snapped back into place, leaving his wrists and hands scraped and bleeding. In that split second, he saw that there was a smaller clearing beyond with scattered cut stones on the ground. Without thinking, Jerry doubled back through the main cemetery and left through the gate, closing it gently but eagerly. He then followed the low fence around to the back, where the hedge hid the back fence and gate. There was only about 3 feet of space to walk between the fence and the tree line, and it tapered in close to the hedge so that he needed to crawl through the dense brush to get to the small, overgrown clearing. As he burst out the other side and stumbled to his knees, puffing heavily, he looked up and saw before him weeds and tall grass. As he gained his balance, neglecting to pause to dust himself off, he approached what looked like a group of small, crudely cut and worn stones, sitting tilted and askew in the grass. They reminded him of a group of kids learning to swim, and finding little success in keeping their heads above water. He thought that if left much longer, they would disappear altogether. This new area, what appeared to be an old, forgotten graveyard, gave off a similar but different vibe. He was still touched with reverence, but one he could not relate to. The former had been more or less like the hush that falls over a wake when a loved one is eulogized and remembered for all the wonderful things they brought to the community and the legacy they were leaving behind. It was an awe which reminded one of the things they could see in their daily lives which the person had touched. This new feeling was different. He had the impression that the people who were buried here were the very founders of Stoat's Grove. That, and they had rolled across this country and settled here long before it was even named. And now they lie here, forgotten. Jerry knelt down and touched the one closest to him. With great care, he began to reveal the entire surface, starting from the right side of the stone, picking off every bit of moss and dusting off all of the loose dirt he could manage. He began pulling out the grass and weeds that surrounded it to give it more space to be revealed fully. It was almost like he was separating it from the overgrown forgottenness of the clearing and forest that was slowly enclosing it more and more each year. He wanted it to be known in that moment, known by him and visible to the world. His breath caught when he was finally able to read its inscription. "Trumbiald," was all it said, in plain lettering. It took him a moment to realize that this was an early version of his own name. What he had found was a headstone of one of his ancestors. This struck him with a sense of ownership over the town and its surrounding roads and countryside. He hadn't ever stopped to acknowledge it, but his family's blood was in the soil, in the fields, the brick and mortar in the buildings downtown, and in the water that flowed down the streams and creeks. This revelation had him sitting there for a while, just meditating on it. He did not bother to uncover any more headstones, but promised to return one day. He would later spend many hours at the library researching the founding of the town. Over the years, he would make a point at each family gathering to question his aunts, uncles, and grandparents about their family history. He would learn of their choice to change the spelling of their name. However, he would search and search, but never find any information about the cemetery. The answer as to why it lay hidden and forgotten eluded him. For years, he would have moments of melancholy when he thought about those who had come before and how they remained with him, nestled in their beds for time out of mind, yet were already forgotten so quickly by the town. This realization was what brought him to the door of the church one day, holding the newly signed deed to take over ownership over the property after it had been finally closed its doors. You see, some churches go that way, unfortunately. The members simply age out. Their kids don't stay around, and neither do they, in a way. After all, it's just a building. It's the community and the love shared within the building that matters. With nobody left to meet in the building, it has no more purpose. That is, unless someone, like Jerry, comes along and renews it. And that's how this museum got started. Jerry Trumbull up and bought it one day. I'm sorry, what was your question? Oh, yeah, directions to town. You're almost there. Just about 3 miles that direction will get you to Swiss Lane. If you reach the lake, you've gone too far. Take a right at Swiss Lane, and that'll lead you to town in about 5 more miles. Take care.
Well, all right. This is a really great story. I love the somber tone throughout and how this main character is sort of lamenting on the history that they do know and the history that they want to know. And it's sort of like, at the same time, is giving us so much characterization of this main character and like what is important to them in that moment, and sort of giving us reasons as to why they are there. While also, in some sense, reminding me of the same feelings I felt about my own small town. Mm-hmm. How, like, in a small town, everything is so much more important, including the people that used to live there. I even remember what, like, I think it was like one of my last weeks in Pflugerville. I too went to the cemetery to go and look at the unmarked black graves, and just see where there are like a few names here and there, just seeing if like I had any stake in the history of this place. And I really love how, I guess, that journey, that sort of personal journey, is sort of described here. How the cemetery feels so real, but it is divorced from the normal characterization of a cemetery. This place isn't creepy. It isn't decrepit. It isn't hostile. It's sort of like a different kind of museum, to where seeing how people ended and seeing what people said about these people can give you so much history on the true nature of a place. So yeah, I just think that this story was very well organized, and of course the description throughout is top tier, and I just love the tone throughout. So really great job.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the star of this story is the imagery and the creation of that somber tone. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The perspective is interesting because it's like, you're right, it's not creepy, but also it's like not, the character hasn't gone to the cemetery in order to grieve a loved one, right? Yes. They actually don't have like a direct, like, I knew this person connection to anyone there, but just through that connection of like the name, they feel, a connection to those buried. And I think that connection extends beyond those people with their name. It extends to the entire sort of cemetery, and sort of just like having a it's a universal, right? People die and sort of get forgotten, and like, you know, he's uncovered some of the oldest ancestors of this particular town, but like, you know, they had ancestors in their hometowns, right? And so exactly. And you can't remember everyone, but you can remember at least some, and yeah, I think it's nice to pull some out of memory, basically.
And I really do love name how, yeah, and I like really do love how there are these moments where the writing allows us to follow the train of thought of this character versus us sort of like operating outside of this character, we are able to get more bits as to what seeing this specific gravestone makes them like think of, and then how that links back to them, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I just feel that is a really nice balance of perspective that is of course feeding into this overall theme of history and things being forgotten, but also how the core of a lot of things remain even if they are divorced from the person, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that the ending was a really nice twist, seeing how the main character ended up buying
mm-hmm.
the cemetery, it seems, and turning it into a museum, if you know I was reading that right, sort of like mm-hmm. telling us that this mm-hmm. place must have held so much significance to this character, whether this was the first time they had been there or like whether this is just what they do on the weekly, seeing how this character had so much care for things forgotten that they decided to make sure that it's never forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is interesting. Yeah, the ending is very, very interesting. Also, I didn't think about people buying cemeteries. How does that work? Like, are they?
I mean, it's possible.
I don't think the bodies are theirs, right? Like,
no. I think maybe it's just buying the like plot of land, because I know the cemetery that is across from my old high school is owned by the same company that built the high school.
Interesting.
Yeah, but like they can't move bodies, I don't think.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, even though that same company got in trouble because the unmarked graves of all of the black people that like used to mm-hmm. live there used to be twice as big.
Oh,
but
my
they
gosh.
Did which is really awful. They did start building stuff on some of it, but not
gosh.
The beginning of it. Yeah. Pretty messy.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Cool. I love that. Yeah, burial practices are very interesting in general. In Uruguay, where my mom is from, and really the only like burial services I've ever participated in, where they're actually like above ground. First, like a corpse is placed in like a more like a coffin kind of thing, but then after I think a year, they're taken out of it after they've already like decomposed and stuff, and there's basically like just bones, and then the bones are put into a much smaller box, that is like then put into like a wall of the same kind of things. So it's a lot more like contained. It's above ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, all the boxes are made of like marble and or some other stone, but
really
it's
cool.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also like when it comes to like burial practices, like there's this link between how people are buried and the sort of cultural mourning practice
mm-hmm.
of that people, which is like really, 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 really interesting. Like, I don't know, here's a question. So like I guess after they take the bones from the coffin and then mm-hmm. put it into the wall, is there any other sort of like cultural thing when it comes to like mourning that is separate than I guess how we see it in the Americas? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they have Day of the Dead. It's not the same as Mexico's. It's not nearly as like vibrant, think. But yeah, a day where you go and pay respects and stuff like that, and of course everyone, you know, does it on their own as well, leaving flowers and such on top of the boxes.
Yeah. was interesting, very, very interesting. And yeah, I mean, I feel that after reading this story, I feel that this story has such a very, like, nicely nuanced and sort of lighter way to talk about death, you know? Mm-hmm. How there like aren't any moments where like the persona sort of delves into like nihilism or like really talks about the like saddening feeling of or, like when someone is gone. It's more so like even though they are gone, they live on through the names, through the like name change, through what they possibly did while they were mm-hmm. living. It's sort of a very optimistic view of this natural end that we will all meet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I find that also the ending, like the actual last part, really interesting. Mm-hmm. What's your take on it? Because like, it kind of sort of has a feeling of like, obviously like the people that are driving through here, they don't stay, they don't care enough to like stay and actually learn about all the stuff, but they did listen to the story. And so like, maybe that is sort of like that carrying on of memory, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's your take?
Yeah, no, I got something very, very similar. I mean, I do believe that the best thing that can possibly happen to anyone is that they will live on through stories, that they will live on through tales and through others. And I think this moment sort of shows that disconnect between people, how these people are passing through, but solely by them stopping to listen to this story, the people in that cemetery gets to live on with it, even if it's just for a moment, sort of like mm-hmm. telling us that there that we go through two kinds of death, that we die physically and then we die when our names leave the mouth of people that care for the last time. And mm-hmm. I sort of see that even though this persona knows that they didn't come there for these stories, that they didn't come there to be in a cemetery, that they choose to rebel against the idea that people are naturally going to be forgotten, mm-hmm. that he is choosing to let them live through him,
mm-hmm.
in a sense. And like, that's kind of what I got from it.
Yeah, like even if he's not even around himself, because it sounds like he's being talked about in the past tense, like his effect still propagates forward. That is something I've been thinking a lot about. You know, there is that, yeah, the saying of like, your second death is the last time that someone says your name. Mm-hmm. And like, that's totally true in some sense, in that you are like forgotten as like the being that you were. But also, like, no one's ever fully understood the being that you were except for yourself. And even then, you don't really understand it.
Exactly.
And, like, but, like, you know, your mark on the world, even if it's literally just, like, you know, the movements of the air that you pass through, it does propagate forward forever. So you are kind of, like, immortal in that sense. A human mind might not remember you, but, like, anything that exists, at least within the bounds of, like, things that could be affected by Earth is still affected by you, which I don't know. I find it very comforting and stuff. So,
oh, very, yeah. This gives me such a sense that us as humans, we are finite yet infinite.
Yes,
and that the way that we can live on forever might not even be in the way that we think. You know, because. Mm-hmm. Like, even if the like curator for this museum stops telling stories about specific people, those people have still gone into the grass and the like phylo, and then thus their like atoms have been turned into have been turned into air that will thus go into someone else. We're part of this ever-changing cycle of death and rebirth, something that us as humans can't even really comprehend.
Yeah.
To where that the most comprehensible way for us to live on is through spoken word, even though we as people are beyond spoken word, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We could really go on and on about this for sure.
Forever.
So thank you, Just And, for writing a story that got us thinking about these things and talking about these things. I'm looking forward to like any discussion on the Discord that we end up having about this, because yeah, it's a really interesting topic and one I've been wrestling with for a bit.
Yeah, definitely. And also I would like to commend you for, I guess, just providing a view of it that is inherently a bit more realist and like optimistic, because I know like when it comes to the typical conversation of death, it's so easy to just become a nihilist, you know, which is kind of just looking at it at on a surface value and not for the depth that it really has. So yeah, overall, just great story. Really loved it.
Yeah, I did too. Let's get into the rest of the submitted stories for the past 2 weeks.
Yes. So the submitted stories for last week were by Justin 88460 again and Walker by Faith. So we will start with the Walker by Faith story titled Marked.
Yeah, so this is on that ongoing series about the thief. He has gone back to a hotel room. He's kind of freaking out over like the situation that he's in and like how he like turned down freaky stalker, like murderer, thief, sex, crazy stuff. I don't know how to summarize all that. But yeah, he's back at his apartment when Mad Morgan shows up again, having followed him home, basically knowing his name now, and he ends up opening the door and he's like knocked out. He wakes up and he is like tied to the bed with her and like the person that he was stalking also there, and yeah, there's an implication of like sexual assault that happens afterwards, and it's really it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, very. I mean, this is such a turn of events for this story, but it's also something that has been sort of slowly being built over time. We can tell that the obsession from Morgan, that this is sort of like the, sadly, natural end to that. I just really do enjoy how the story has broken, I guess, the like previous trajectory and tension, and giving us something that's very grounded and like just very begrudging and like disgusting, but in a way that we understand how we got here. I'm wondering if this is the end, or if there will be more after this. But if this is the end, I think that it's a good end because we are shocked by that twist, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely an uncomfortable thing.
Quite uncomfortable.
I don't know really how to talk about it. Like, I have some feelings about this particular depiction. I guess just the whole thing with like most sexual assaults are not done violently by strangers, but most of them are done by people that like you already know. And I guess sort of like that sort of aspect was kind of missing, I suppose. It's definitely like the kind of sexual assault that happens when people think of those words, I don't know how to approach the topic, but I guess I'm just like
Well, yeah, I guess it's other... more of just like, mm-hmm. it's the reality versus fiction. And like,
yeah, I suppose so.
And like how much agency might not be the right word, but like how much responsibility does a author have in depicting something like this in a realistic light, quote unquote. Granted, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like this does happen. It's just, you know, yeah, when it comes to the typical way that something as awful as this happens, it is always just someone, it tends to be someone that the person knows previously versus a stranger. Yeah,
I guess what the reason I bring up those details is not because I'm just like, oh, you have to write it this way or whatever, just because I feel like there was an element missing of like the complicated nature of mm-hmm. usually those kinds of sexual assaults, which is like, you know, like the sort of narration going in someone's head of like, you know, maybe I should want this, or maybe, like I should just like let them, you know, do whatever they want and just to get it over with. Or if I mm-hmm. say no, then, there will be like consequences, either, you know, maybe they just won't like me or something. Obviously more intense than that, but anyway, yeah, because this is just kind of like a uncomplicated portrayal of sexual assault when usually it's it is more
black and white.
Yeah. I mean, I still think it was definitely worthy, and I think it's definitely interesting and like bold, I suppose, to write a male sexual assault. Okay, mm-hmm. so I think it is one major thing is like the like there is sort of a complication of like, isn't this an incels like wet dream kind of thing? And I think I would have liked to see that explored more in the character's mind of like they feel like on some level they should want it, but like they don't, and it is not it's not consensual.
Yeah, so like you were looking for that extra layer of a complication that does, yes, typically go into situations like this. Whereas in the text itself, which is a great text, don't like get us wrong, but I guess mm-hmm. yes, the ending is very black and white, cut or dry, mm-hmm. and there's not that like moment where the main character is struggling mm-hmm. with this sort of push and pull, you know, that happens within these situations.
Yeah, because like that is where the violation happens, right? Like it's mm-hmm. a physical thing, but like the real, you know,
the real damage,
the harm that is done is in someone's mind. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so this the amount of time that I've spent talking about this is not like proportionate to like the amount of critique. I mean, it's just like it took me a while to articulate what I wanted to say. But yes, otherwise I did very much enjoy the story.
Oh yeah, same. I mean, like, it is a really, really great story with this very awful twist at the very end, and we both really, really liked it. So yeah, if you choose to continue with this story, that would be great, but if this is the end,
they did continue with the story in the next week entry. That's the ending to this. Yes.
that's what I was leading into.
Gotcha. Okay.
Overall, thank you very much for submitting your story last week. And the next story we will be talking about from last week is by JustStan8460 with Portal Quest.
Yeah, so this is a narrative of a woman, Herrick, sneaking into a tomb, basically, in this magical world. The description of all of it is really interesting. We're setting up that, like, there's some horrible evil down there, but it's also, there is some treasure. They make it through all of mm-hmm. the traps and such, interspersed with this beep. When suddenly someone else shows up and like ruins the her sneakiness and wakes up the ancient evil, then there's a sequence up down XXX RTLTOOO. So clearly a sign that we're like there's something related to games. Uh-huh. And finally, it ends with fucking noob, I almost had the portal open. I will end you. And then Jerry rips his headset off and throws it on the bed. And he storms out of the room, angry, depressed, and ready to scarf down the pizza rolls that have been getting cold in the microwave for the last 20 minutes.
Ha. Gamer rage. So yeah, no, this story had a really nice twist at the very end, a very fun twist, which does work really, really well with the deep description that we get throughout, to where it feels very like real and like grounded throughout it up until we get to those button mashes. Which just serves that to like make the twist even more comedic and impactful, because it sort of shakes the like mental image that we were painting throughout. So yeah, I think that, you know, this story is crafted pretty well, especially, you know, when after reading the like ending, we can go back and like see what hints were possibly present throughout, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find it interesting that the description of the video game world is so in depth and like complicated. We also like get in her head kind of. But then yeah, we step out and like the real world is more distant than the video game world was.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, this is a really, really fun story, and I like the levity. I also love the little added bit of the pizza rolls being in the oven for like 20 minutes. It's that part is realer than like real life. I've been there 1,000 times. So yeah, no, it's a really fun story by Justin 8460.
Mm-hmm. What's the next story we're talking about?
Yep, so the next story from this week is by Walker by Faith with a new chapter.
Yeah, so this is the final it seems like the final conclusion to that series. Here we sort of skip ahead a good amount after the assault, and they're actually at a cemetery, at the grave for Morgan, and sort of dealing with, the aftermath of, her assaulting him and mm-hmm. such, and sort of just also giving a story of what might have happened, which, she died in an accident, apparently. The main character sort of processed the trauma by writing a book, so that was good at least. Mm-hmm. They do have an interesting story, I will say. But by the end of the story, they decide to say the last thing that they need to say, which is "I forgive you," which I think is obviously just for themselves to grow, considering it's a grave. It's not like mm-hmm. Morgan needs to hear that.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, this gives, like, a lot of introspection of this character, especially, like, so much time after what happened in the previous entry. And I do like the bit about them finding out what their real name is and sort of lamenting how it never really mattered, but like as long as they knew them as Mad Morgan. So yeah, I mean, this story really does harken back to a lot of the things that we said about the cemetery story that we read this episode. Just, you know, views on death, but this really decides to hyper focus on the personal growth of a person mm-hmm. when it comes to viewing the grave that of someone that hurt them so much. Mm-hmm. How even though that quote unquote true closure isn't there and it can't be there, it doesn't mean that this character can't act to find their own closure. And it seems that they have been trying to do that for some time. I mean, they like wrote a book, and like even after writing a book about the like whole thing, they still find it important enough to go and see the grave and to go and forgive this grave, not the person, but to possibly forgive themselves for mm-hmm. that moment, which is really, really interesting. And it is sort of working with a lot of different things and saying a lot about the variety of processes we go through when it comes to grieving mm-hmm. or grieving and mourning, but also getting over trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if there's anything to critique, it's basically that I felt like I didn't fully get what specifically the character was going through, what were their feelings about their trauma. Uh-huh. He says to the headstone, "You really messed me up." And I believe it, but I don't know in what ways, you know? Like, how did it ruin their trust with people, or did they have, like, flashbacks to it, or whatever else? Of course, I totally understand, like, not wanting to delve into that, and I do, like, respect, like, you know, skipping forward to this moment. I still think that the story, you know, really stands on its own with the need for forgiveness that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that is something that might have been worth exploring. Of course, Walker by Faith does talk about how they felt icky after last week and didn't want to stay in, like, that awful place. And that is really valid. You don't have to if you don't want
to. Very, very valid. Yeah, very, very much so. And, I mean, this like, entry does give us a lot of that, I guess, added layer of complication we were talking about when it came to the last entry. And I think that this does end in a hopeful place, really, whereas mm-hmm. where the like last one ended in a place that was the stark opposite.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Last story we're talking about.
Oh yeah. So the last story we are going to be talking about is by a new writer named Real Kate 98 with
yes, sorry, I just wanted to say that I like the rhyme of it
very much so. Yeah. With decomposition and regeneration.
Yeah, so this is more of an essay, of course having to do with a cemetery. I did like how all three, I mean, I knew one of the words was cemetery, but still,
exactly, yeah.
had to do with those themes and exploring that. But sort of talking about how with society, about how there's like illegal ways to be buried and how that's kind of really strange, and sort of a great distance from like the natural world. Uh-huh. and then they transition to sort of talking about food waste and like just waste in general. We're just not living in a sustainable world much at all. And because just like returning things to the earth, I suppose, is not a efficient way to handle things. And that's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this story essay does really raise a lot of questions, you know, especially when it comes to not only our burial practices, but our modern culture. Mm-hmm. I know we didn't talk about it on the podcast, but I remember telling you about how much food went to waste at the Texas-Mexico border. Mm-hmm. Because of the sort of stringent and I think racially charged sort of checkings of mm. everyone's stuff and how it is checked 4 to 5 times. And due to that, about $250 million worth of produce went to waste in transit. And, you know, that sort of really breeds into how much us as humans are really wasting, you know?
Yeah,
and
it's much a big we bummer.
It's a huge bummer. And how much we take for, like, granted, you know? We will chop down a tree and then, you know, build like, three different buildings there. But we embalm our bodies after we die that poisons the land that we put it in, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just really love how this story really makes us think about the position that humans hold within this world, and sort of showing us what we hopefully should do versus what we are doing. But I also like how this story sort of doesn't know how to bridge that gap, you know?
Yeah. Even though it was just an essay, I felt like if you just put a character in it, it would have been a story. Not that you have to, but
yeah.
It works on its own. A story doesn't have to be more, it could just be in a character's voice. It doesn't have to have like a place or anything necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, yeah, like I feel that this essay was so close to that. Like, I mean, as you said, all it really needed was a person looking at the body of someone that like died, and then really the rest of this essay can stay as is, as this person is lamenting on the very visceral process of reality, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's give a thanks to everyone who wrote a story. We can just thank the ones from this week.
Yeah, so thank you very much to Walker by Faith, Justin 8460, and Real Kate 95. And we'd also like to say thank you to everyone who left a comment. 98. We also like to say thank you to everyone who left their comments. Leaving mm-hmm. comments not only under your own story, but under someone else's will condense all of your own ideas for others to see. But you are also providing someone else with crucial feedback that can only improve theirs and your own writing. So, thank you very much to JustDan8460 and Walker by Faith. Thank you so much for leaving comments.
Mm-hmm. If you want to be like all these wonderful writers, the best way to do that would be to go to reddit.com/dotherightthing, find the most recent thread, and then see the words and write your story. I think it's a very good way to practice your writing. If you haven't done it in a while, consider doing so. I think it's always good to stretch your writing muscles, etc. I'd love to see some old faces again.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And also, if you'd like to support us and everything else happening in Doof Media, you can do that by donating to the Doof Media Patreon. Donating $10 or more per month will give you access to exclusive bonus content that is being rolled out by every member of the Doof Media troupe.
Mm-hmm. Except for us.
Except for us.
Well, I hope that with the classes maybe tapering off a little bit, that we'll be able to record some stuff soon.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. The hope is probably after this current month ends, I'll definitely need to be doing my homework, because we have a couple of ideas down the pipeline that we definitely need to hit, mm-hmm. strike while the iron's still hot.
Mm-hmm. If you want to see the words as soon as they come out, the best place to do that would be to follow us on Twitter @RightThingCast. You can also send us an email and just say whatever you want at rightthingcast@gmail.com. All right, Jarvis, what are the words for this week?
Ah, thank you so much for asking. Let me just consult the Right Thing gods and see what beautiful words they have deemed are perfect and pretentious for next week.
Mm-hmm.
So the words for next week are awful, threaten, rehearsal, and identification.
Okay, so the first word, awful, that is definitely setting a tone, uh-huh. meaning something very, very bad.
Very bad.
To be avoided. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like a sick feeling in your stomach, that would be awful. Or
oof.
When people die, but like in very bad ways, those are also awful.
Uh-huh.
Okay, next word is threat. Already kind of sensing a little bit of a theme there.
Yeah.
A threat is something that...
danger?
Yes, a danger. Something that can cause harm, but maybe hasn't yet. You can also threaten someone, which would be to declare yourself a danger.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's all of them.
Yeah, that's all of them.
Mm-hmm. Rehearsal, which is to practice for a production of some sort. Mm-hmm. I think it's, I don't know the full extent of what, I know, like, okay, obviously there's plays.
Yeah.
And also, dances are rehearsed as well. And so is a lot of kinds of music.
Yeah, but when it comes to, like, sports or art, typically there isn't a, like, it's not considered mm-hmm. rehearsal, it's considered practice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah, interesting. So maybe it's because
with rehearsals, you're going through the same sort of motions each time.
Yes, yes. And then maybe it's that with a rehearsal, you are going through the like, same motions, but it's working towards a specific end goal.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Yeah.
And last word, identification, which is a document of some sort that declares your identity.
Yes. To identify.
Mm-hmm. To mm-hmm. name something, to recognize it as a thing that it is.
Mm-hmm. Also, I guess it could be used to categorize something too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
What is your 10-second story, Jarvis?
My 10-second story is about the West Austin Theater Troupe, and while they are rehearsing for their production of Macbeth, the director says the word Macbeth three times, and the whole theater troupe is threatened because of superstition. And then on the opening night, a awful thing happens. The legs of the curtain break, and they hit the main actor. So then the understudy has to go on, but they do not identify with the character /. They didn't rehearse a single line. So opening night was the worst night of the entire play, and it just went downhill from there.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
My story is about a band. And one of the band members is really mad because they refuse to play his song, even though it's really awful. And so he threatens to leave and never go to rehearsal again. And the rest of the band is like, that's fine, because we just identified a new drummer/singer,
oh, no.
which was his role. And then they get it. Now, the twist is that this is Air Bud, and the drummer is a dog.
So what, this is the 12th Air Bud movie?
Yes.
Drummer Bud?
Drum Bud.
Drum yes. Bud. Well, you know what? The best thing about the Air Bud series is that, of course, there is a lesson in each and every movie that challenged us as children, as teens, and even now as adults, to do the right thing.
Very smooth, Jarvis.
Thank you.
But you forgot there's a rule. There's no dogs in Rock Band. Okay, I'm done. good night, folks.
There's no dogs in Rock Band.
Sorry. You shouldn't be laughing. It wasn't good.